This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. Nuclear weapons. The 20th century's problem, nuclear weapons. The first Cold War's problem, nuclear weapons. Not yet. I welcome Henry Sokolsky, the executive director of the Nonproliferation Policy Education Center, to comment on where we are right now with regard to our adversaries and nuclear weapons. Henry, a very good evening to you. I come to the facts of the matter. We have discussed in previous conversations the Chinese ambition to grow their nuclear farm that they're building somewhere in the northwest of the country, silo after silo. At the same time, the Russians are not only building new nuclear weapon capabilities, but they're boasting about it at the Kremlin during Ukraine war. So we come to what is to be done. I first want to identify the problem. Once upon a time, the first Cold War ended. There was a peace dividend. And the U.S. believed the way forward was treaties. Yes, there is a START treaty that will be renegotiated, we hope, in 2026. But these treaties led to the U.S. assumption that if we restrained our nuclear arsenal, our adversaries, or at the time, our trading partners, would also restrain their nuclear arsenal. That was then. Did it work, Henry? Good evening to you.
Good evening. I think the short answer is not very well. I think initially there was some justification dismantling an awful lot of the arsenal. This was done under Bush 1 and Bush 2, as well as Clinton. But the data started to roll in shortly thereafter that the Russians and the Chinese had a different take, ultimately, and they started modernizing. And now, in the case of China, and to some lesser extent Russia, but still quantitatively, pushing upward in numbers. And so that's where we find ourselves, or have found ourselves, in the last, I'd say, 8 to 9 years. And we're now trying to figure out what to do.
There's an essay in the Dispatch by Ambassador Eric Edelman and his colleague Franklin Miller, who point to something called a modernization holiday beginning around the end of the 1980s, but certainly towards the end of the second century. Has that modernization holiday continued? Are we still under its assumptions?
No. In fairness, the New START agreement with Obama was transactional with people like Senator Kyle is quite hawkish. And the quid pro quo was we have to, rework the triad. And so in fits and starts, we've been doing that ever since New START. It's just, I think the problem is the Department of Energy that makes nuclear warheads and the contractors that make long-range missiles, particularly ICBMs, have gotten out of the habit of doing things quickly and cheaply. As a result, these programs are extremely expensive and quite drawn out. Most people don't realize it, but just to maintain the number of weapons that we have, we need to make what's called primaries or pits, and that we won't be in a position to maintain what we have until 2035, according to the latest testimony from DOE, Department of Energy, and our ground-based strategic deterrent, which is our new ICBM, will not be fully operational until 2036. So that's a few weeks into the future at best.
We come to where we are now in the Biden administration. In other words, we're sweeping over recent history from Bush, the late George H.W. Bush administration, the Bill Clinton administration, the George W. Bush administration, and the Barack Obama administration to come to Mr. Biden's administration. The Biden administration chose to postpone and then cancel a test of Minuteman III, the ICBM form of modernization. The response from Russia was the test of what they called Satan II, the Sarmat heavy ICBM that can carry multiple warheads. The report here is that the Department of Defense did not regard this as a threat or did not regard this as a serious departure in the contest between Moscow and Washington. Is it, Henry? Does that Sarmat test represent a real and present danger?
Well, I always say timing has to be considered for any political assessment of anything. We're in the middle of a major contest over the sovereignty of a major European country, Ukraine. So even if it wasn't a major technological advance, shooting that thing off at this point was a way for Putin to say, look at me when I say I'm threatening intercontinental nuclear assault if you misbehave at some level with regard to this contest in Ukraine. He looks more credible. So that's not a great look. And as far as the size of this thing, as our former president would say, it's huge. I mean, it's really large. And so you do have to worry, how many warheads would they put on that? And what does that mean for the survivability of our ICBM force, which we're modernizing and putting, get this, in holes that are clearly vulnerable and old? They're going to upgrade them a little, but they're not going to be particularly harder. Apparently, our plan is to launch on warning or alert. That is not a step forward for us. And certainly that test of a very large missile by the Russians suggests we might be vulnerable.
The explanation is that the Russians notified us in advance of the launch, accordance with the New START provisions. Is that promising or is that confusing? How do you regard the Russians being polite about their belligerence?
Well, it beats the alternative. I mean, I take any favor or notice I can get. I mean, I don't think we should be denigrating that, but the idea that there's safety in that alone is pretty obviously not a complete thought either. No, you need to ask, given our bad relations with Russia, and you know, with cause, and I don't fault the current administration for having bad relations with the Russians. What are the prospects of reaching any meaningful agreements? Not very good. I mean, at a minimum, Mr. Putin would have to leave the scene or his ilk. That may not be at hand. We'll have to see. So that whole hope of restraint, fostering restraint, is a little bit in the doghouse right now.
The Biden administration, however, has voiced this quote, reducing the role of nuclear weapons is the policy of the United States of America. That was an explanation for the canceling of one program, which I learn is called the SLCM/N, which stands for Submarine Launched Nuclear Cruise Missile. That would have augmented our submarine fleet, which I've long understood is the strength of the triad. It is undetectable for our peer adversaries, and it carries enough to answer any first strike. Now, the cancellation of that missile, SLNC, what did we get for the cancellation? We saved a little money, but did we grow more confident that we could stand off the Russians and the Chinese?
Well, my read of that program, which has been long discussed in a dispute for nearly, I'd say almost 15 years, is that it mostly has to do with reassuring Japan, perhaps more than any other single country. They will whisper that they would prefer that we had it. Now, we do have ICBMs with low yield warheads now. That was done under the Trump administration. So, yeah, the arms control community says, well, come on. I think the bigger point is, it's not canceled yet. That is what the administration wants. Watch, Congress is pushing back. And so, you know, that dispute and story isn't over yet.
We have a quote in this essay by Ambassador Edelman and his colleague. This is the STRATCOM commander, Admiral Charles Richards. The war in Ukraine and China's nuclear trajectory, their strategic breakout, demonstrates that we have a deterrence and assurance gap based on the threat of limited nuclear employment. It doesn't sing the way missile gap did in our youth, Henry, but it's okay. Deterrence and assurance gap. Is that recognized in Washington? And is that the challenge?
I think it's a challenge, but what it means, I agree with you, is incoherent in that those words have an enormous bandwidth of possible meaning. You know, what is deterrence? What is assurance? I mean, that is not a very crisp thing compared to they have X number of weapons and we have Y, which is what the missile gap was, which I have to point out didn't turn out to be quite right. but I digress. I think the problem is that the number of weapons we have isn't quite the entire story. It's their survivability. I would say that our forces face a challenge in surviving a first strike. That's a little more focused, a point. And I mentioned that our ICBMs have to be fired pretty quickly upon warning or alert to survive. That's not how it was originally designed to work. They originally were put in hardened silos so that they could actually ride out an attack, and then the president could have the time and deliberation to figure out what to do after that. That's no longer the case. And I think that argues for making our ICBMs, which are invulnerable stationary holes or silos, mobile. I think our planes and the number of bombers is becoming smaller. We need to probably move in the direction, not so much of expanding the number of warheads, but like the ICBMs, making the number of and types of planes that can carry the bombs much larger. And that may not be building more planes so much as making more planes capable of carrying the bombs that we have. So there's a gap in survivability. I think more important than the nuclear survivability, however, is that the leverage that these nuclear weapons have in shaping and preventing and deterring conflict is not as great as it needs to be. The kind of warfare that we're seeing in Ukraine is happening despite having nuclear weapons. I'm not sure that even if we were in great shape with our nuclear forces beyond whatever it is and in line with what nuclear proponents would want, it would make enough of a difference. I think the war would still happen. So that has to do, you know, preventing those kinds of wars are going to require more than just having a strong nuclear hand.
I'm speaking with Henry Sokolsky, the executive director of the Nonproliferation Policy Education Center. We're talking about the day the world ended, not yet, about the exchange of strategic nuclear weapons between the peer adversaries, the United States of America and its NATO allies. France and Britain both have nuclear weapons in submarines, to my understanding, and Russia and China. When we come back, what is to be done? We'll speak of submarines, but we'll also speak of space-based responses to the clear belligerence, at least of Moscow, if not also Beijing. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.